The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Simon Tierney, good morning.
Good morning, Jonathan.
We are going to talk about food combinations because Milka chocolates crossover with Tuck crackers, pink lemonade flavoured with dairy milk. The appetite for unusual food combinations has exploded. They may seem to be innovative, but the origins of mixing these weird culinary bedfellows is actually rooted in a very dark, deep history of food. I'd love to know what the motivation is behind this.
Well, what I've noticed in my research, Jonathan, I suppose, is that products in the unusual food combination space, they tend to straddle two very different areas. So either they are deliberately wacky, like if you remember Tato's combination with chocolate a couple of years ago,
yes.
They created this Tato cheese and onion chocolate bar.
And they did cola bottles as well.
And they did. Yeah, you're right. I remember that one. That's clearly a marketing gimmick designed to attract attention. But on the other end of the scale, there seems to be a more genuine attempt at creating bold new flavour combinations. They tend to be more premium, about satisfying an ever more sophisticated palate, I suppose.
Jams and condiments are great examples.
Yeah, so think about the jam company Follon from your great county of Cork, of course. They recently brought out a strawberry and prosecco jam, Jonathan. No doubt you're putting it on your toast every morning.
Of course, it's to the standard I have been raised, Simon.
Now, such a combination like that would have been unthinkable when we were growing up. But now, I suppose, something like that would be seen as aspirational. It suggests a customer who might pop over to Wimbledon in June for the tennis.
Hang on. They're in their pants with toast, Simon. Wimbledon is far from their thoughts.
Someone, I suppose, who thinks that plain old jam simply isn't enough anymore. Or else, of course, it's seen as notions gone mad. Personally, I see the idea of Prosecco jam as a decent way of legitimising day drinking, Jonathan. It doesn't count as booze if it's spread on your toast, does it?
Well, it's 12 o'clock somewhere. You can take us back, though, to the middle of the last century, because when you think about this, the biggest marketing company of them all were the ones that kind of led this, weren't they?
Yeah, absolutely. Coca-Cola is interesting, I think, in this space because they capitalized on a late 19th century idea, which was concocted by a man called Robert Greene. Now, he operated a soda fountain in Philadelphia. And the soda fountains are really interesting, Jonathan, because they were the early purveyors, of course, of fizzy drinks. They were physical locations, places. They almost looked like pharmacies, and they were the only places where you could get a drink carbonated for you. They weren't pre-carbonated. They would carbonate them in front of you. And the technology that he had in 1874, he started introducing a scoop of ice cream to his beverages to great success.
Okay, so that was the ice cream float, wasn't it?
My
daughter has only recently found these and thinks they're the best invention that has ever come across to you, because it was quite popular here as well, wasn't it?
Oh, absolutely. I remember when I was a kid, myself and my brother, we used to make these at home when my parents weren't around, and we'd lob a spoon of HB vanilla into a large glass of Coke and mix it into a kind of a lovely sugary gazpacho.
Yeah, so that wasn't a float as such now. That was some kind of abomination with
it
sugar
was
in it.
An absolute abomination watching The Simpsons on the couch. But the Coca-Cola companies themselves, they had jumped on the bandwagon decades previously. Have a listen to this ad from 1961.
Here's a cool idea. An ice cream float with Coke. What a refreshing combination. Here's how you make them. First, fill a glass two-thirds full with delicious ice-cold Coca-Cola. Then add a generous scoop of your favorite ice cream, ice milk, or sherbet. A tablespoon will do if you have no scoop. Now a touch more Coca-Cola, like so. Then garnish with chopped nuts, cherry, or the like. And there you have it, a float with Coke. It's just about the zingiest drink ever sipped through a straw. Some interesting combinations are floats made with Coke and lime sherbet, or raspberry ripple, or strawberry ice cream. Experiment a little and discover your own. Get that refreshing new feeling. Enjoy a float with Coke. Pick up packages of ice cream and cartons of Coca-Cola next time you shop.
Yeah, Gar Mullen's coming in later on, and he's going to have to up his game based on that recipe.
Definitely
has to do that. But the idea of placing these very conflicting ingredients together it goes back even further. It goes back to the medieval period. And you've been, as is your wont, delving into the history books about some older and weirder stuff.
Yeah, well, I think a really interesting example, Jonathan, is if you look at the humble mince pie, why do we call it this? Because, of course, originally it had meat in it. And I found a very early recipe from a British cookbook dating back to the 1390s. And the pie in it is described as a tart of flesh. Sounds delicious. And it contained stewed bird, rabbit, eggs, cheese, sugar, saffron and other spices all piled into this kind of large, thick pastry
other
shell.
Other spices is doing a lot of lifting there.
Whenever an ingredients list says may contain traces of or other.
Yeah, it's doing a lot of work. Yeah.
So this was a sweet and spicy meat pie. And I suppose it laid the foundations really for the much blander version we enjoy today. But it really illustrates, I think, for me, how our understanding of what constitutes an unusual food combination nowadays is actually nothing compared to what our ancestors were putting together in the kitchen.
Out of necessity rather than marketing. Robert says, bring back the tater chocolate. It was amazing. I think you can still get it in what? No, Tater Park is gone now, so maybe you can't get it there. John says, remember Frilk. Orange juice and milk. It was vile, says John. Yeah, good marketing name, though. We do have something that works really well, which is the good old crisp sandwich. And it's very natural to an Irish person, but the Americans are extremely perplexed by it.
Yeah, to such an extent that the Irish actor Jamie Dornan, he was asked about this during his interview on Jimmy Kimmel Live a couple of years ago. And the crisp sandwich was sort of presented by Kimmel as this Irish curiosity, a sort of mystifying culinary oddity from the old Emerald Isle. And they even gave Jamie the ingredients on a tray and they asked him to make it during the interview. Now, in this piece that we're going to listen to, Jonathan, he calls it a tato smashy. Have you ever heard that term?
No, that must be a Nordy thing.
It's what they call it up in Northern Ireland. And listen carefully to how Jamie makes his crisp sandwich, because I think your listeners might take issue with some of it.
Right.
What we're making here is called a tato smashy. So this is what you do. Ideally, you find the cheapest white bread you can find.
Okay.
There used to be a bread back home called Mighty White, which was like
Wonder Bread kind of thing?
Sugary death. Yeah.
Okay. Right?
Anyway, you go heavy on the mayo, both sides.
Oh, two sides of the mayo.
So you don't muck around with light mayonnaise either. You do the real stuff.
That's regular ham? Okay,
that's regular ham. Mm-hmm. I actually find the cheaper ham, the better.
Mm-hmm.
It all comes from the same animal.
Okay.
You go quite heavy on there, right? You get like five or six slices. You get potato, cheese, and onion, which are a company there's in the north of Ireland where I'm from. Their cheese and onion are the best crisp they do. You put the entire packet on there.
Uh-huh.
This is small bread, I'm going to say. And this is maybe the most exciting thing that'll happen in your day, your year, your life, is the crunch. Is why it's called tato smashy. You go this and go.
Ooh, that's got a nice sound.
I have a number of things. Jewish yes. First of all, given the man models underwear for a living, he's never eaten one of those. And second of all, what's with the mayonnaise?
I know. That was what shocked me. I mean, for me, a crisp sandwich has to be made with an inch of butter.
Yeah.
Butter.
And hang? No.
Hang.
No. Don't
no, hang.
So look, anyway, we leave Jamie Dornan's weirdness there on Jimmy Kimmel. Elvis had a good one.
Yes. Now, I love this story because Elvis's favourite sandwich, Jonathan, I don't know if you've come across this tale, but it gets to the heart of people's obsession with combining sweet and savoury together. Now, we used to do this, of course, with the mince pie because, as you mentioned briefly, it was a way of preserving, you know, adding sugar to meat or salt to meat or whatever. But on February the 1st of 1976, this story, Elvis flew himself and his pals from Graceland to Denver on his private jet, of course, the Lisa Marie. And the point of this almost 2,000-kilometre journey was because he'd heard a rumour about a mysterious sandwich in Denver called the Fool's Gold Loaf. And he had the means to satisfy this whim, of course, so he set off in the middle of the night to get it.
Sandwiches now, of course, would have been Elvis's downfall, ultimately. He had a fondness for them.
He was very enthusiastic about sandwiches. You're absolutely right, Jonathan. His favourite actually was banana and peanut butter. It's a very American thing to be doing. And now, he was heavy when he died, of course. He weighed 25 stone when he died just 1 year after this particular adventure. So high calorie sandwiches seem to be the norm. Now, when he landed in Denver at 1:40 a.m. local time, the proprietor of the Colorado Mine Company diner met him in his airport hangar in Denver, and they presented him with 22 of these fool's gold loaf sandwiches, each of which contained, mind, just under 8,000 calories each.
Right, okay, so that's definitely going to help him on his way. What exactly was in the fool's gold sandwich?
Okay, so this is where it gets interesting. I've sourced a news report from that same diner by ABC News in 2015, which would have marked Elvis's 80th birthday. And we'll also hear from Buck Scott on a 1995 BBC documentary. Buck was actually the man who owned the diner that Elvis made famous. Why can't you see?
For millions of fans, Elvis is their favorite entertainer.
One for the money, two for the show. Get ready now.
But for restaurant owner Nick Andrulakis, the king of rock and roll was his all-time favorite customer and friend.
I got to spend some time with him while he was alive, and I wish he was still alive. He was a great man.
Nick was 16 years old, working as a cook at the Colorado Mine Company, when he fixed his first Fool's Gold sandwich for Elvis.
A pound of peanut butter, a pound of jelly, blueberry preserves actually, a pound of bacon on a one-pound sourdough loaf.
I'm Buck Scott, and this is my wife Cindy. And Elvis helped make us famous for a moment by coming to Denver on one occasion and having 22 peanut butter and jelly sandwiches delivered to his plane on the runway. It's called Fool's Gold on the menu, and it was his favorite sandwich. Surprised us when he came up, had the peanut butter and jelly sandwiches, and turned around and flew back. He was planning on going on tour, so there was some conversation about getting in shape and doing whatever he had to do to get there. Peanut butter and jelly wasn't one of the things.
My mouth is kind of clamming up.
Yeah, you can imagine. Like a pound of peanut butter, that's half a kilogram almost. That's a huge amount of peanut butter.
Kind of explains what happened the year afterwards. It really does. ABC News, they're describing one of Elvis's favourite sandwiches. Simon Tierney, thank you very much,
Jonathan,
for that report. Owen texted and say, I have my tato sandwich with mayonnaise and ham. Thank you so much for playing that clip. I know I'm not the only one, and I'm from the Midlands. Owen, a career of modelling in your jocks is just a phone call away.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.